From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Korean Context. I'm Junie Kim, filling in for our usual host, Jenna Gibson. When experts and policymakers often talk about possible options in curbing North Korea's nuclear program, China is practically always considered a crucial factor. For this week's episode, we spoke with Gordon Chang, author of The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, about China-North Korea's relationship and what it means for U.S. and South Korean security. Enjoy. Gordon, thank you for taking time to talk with us on this important issue. To start off, what is North Korea's relationship with China, and why is it considered so important to finding a solution to North Korea's nuclear program?
Without China, as they say, North Korea could neither bark nor bite. Without China, there's no North Korea. China's hold over the North Korean economy is impressive. China accounts for more than 90% of North Korea's external trade. It provides more than 90% of North Korea's oil, much of it on concessionary terms. There are some years where China provides 100% of North Korea's aviation fuel. China provides about a third, maybe more, of North Korea's foodstuffs. China is just so important. It provides all of the diplomatic backing for the North Koreans. You know, but the most important thing that China provides is confidence. It's confidence to regime members that they are safe from the United States, from South Korea, from the rest of the international community. And I don't know if China could change Kim Jong-un's mind, but if China wanted to, it could separate regime elements from Kim by signaling their lack of support for Mr. Kim. So I believe that China could solve the North Korean problem on its own if it wanted to. It just doesn't want to because it sees North Korea as a weapon against the United States and its friends and allies.
You mentioned that China makes the bulk of trade with North Korea. Early this year on February 18th, Beijing announced that they would not purchase coal from North Korea for the rest of 2017, in accordance to UN sanctions that were passed last year. What do you think this means for China-North Korea's relationship, and do you believe these sanctions are being properly enforced?
We would like to believe that China is honoring its announcement on February 18th that it will not buy coal from North Korea for the rest of the year. But unfortunately, China in fact bought coal from North Korea in February after the announcement. They also bought it in April. In April, a North Korean ship was seen unloading coal in Tangshan. And then the Chinese Foreign Ministry said, yeah, we're allowing North Korean vessels to unload coal, but we're only doing that for quote-unquote humanitarian concerns, and we're not quote-unquote importing the coal. Well, that was April. How about May? Well, in May, Anna Fifield of the Washington Post reports that observers on the China-North Korean border saw North Korean trains coming into China with coal. They also saw trucks. And in June, there were five North Korean-linked ships that were unloading coal in China, in Shanghai, and in northeastern ports. And it's not just coal. China has been busting other sanctions as well. The sanctions in UN resolutions 2270 and 2321 about importing minerals, because China's been buying zinc, silver, and copper from North Korea. And that's a violation of sanctions as well. So China's a sanctions buster. And although they say that they strictly implement UN rules, they're not. And we need to call them on it.
On the topic of sanctions, that comes down to the million-dollar question. If China is not enforcing the sanctions, what can the U.S. administration under Trump do to incentivize Chinese cooperation on sanctions?
Well, up to now, the Trump administration has employed this approach of its predecessors in trying to obtain China's cooperation by making concessions beforehand and hoping that the Chinese will reciprocate. Well, I hope it works now, but it hasn't worked in the past. And I think the only thing that will work is for the United States to impose severe costs on China so that it has no choice but to help the United States. So, for instance, we know that Chinese banks have been participating in North Korea's illicit commerce. and the United States could impose severe fines on the Chinese banks. I mean, we did that with regard to European banks that were busting Iran sanctions. We haven't touched the Chinese banks. But even more than just imposing fines, I think the United States should deny Chinese banks access to their dollar accounts in New York if they've been involved in dangerous activities. So, for instance, a UN panel of experts reports notes that Bank of China, one of China's big four banks, had designed a scheme to handle money illicitly for the North Koreans. I don't understand why Bank of China is still doing business in the United States. Now, I know that unplugging a big Chinese bank, or even a small one, will rock the global markets, but at least it will tell Beijing, for the first time since 1994, that we're serious about protecting the American homeland. And indeed, I don't understand why the Chinese should take us seriously if we don't place a high priority on enforcing our own laws. So this is really not an issue of North Korea. It's not an issue of China. It's an issue of American political will. Do American political leaders have the will to protect American people?
You mentioned earlier the trucks with coal going over the Chinese-North Korean border, and also cooperation with Chinese banks in North Korea. Are there other avenues of cooperation between the two countries that show the breadth of this relationship?
There are some very disturbing signs of Chinese weapons showing up in North Korea's inventory. So, for instance, the missiles that North Korea tested on August 24th, February 12th, and May 21st look very much like China's JL-1 submarine-launched missile. Also, on April 15th of this year, the North Koreans paraded a very large canister through Kim Il-sung Square. That canister was riding on what looks like a Chinese transporter erector launcher, and that canister also looks like the one that China uses for either its DF-31 or its DF-41 missile. Now, I'm not saying that the Chinese gave the DF-31 or the DF-41 to the North Koreans, but I think we need to start asking some questions. There are too many instances of Chinese or Chinese-looking equipment showing up in North Korea's ballistic missile inventory. Also, in addition, in spring 2016, David Albright of the Institute for Science and International Security reported that the North Koreans were sourcing uranium hexafluoride, vacuum pumps, and valves for their nuclear weapons program. We know that a Chinese company, Dandong Hongshang Industrial Development, has selling the North Koreans chemicals, especially aluminum oxide, that are used to process nuclear fuel. There are just too many of these instances to think it's just a coincidence. And so therefore, the United States needs to have some very difficult conversations with Beijing. And I think that we have to realize that our prior approaches haven't worked, and that what we need to do is to view China very much in the same light as we view North Korea, and impose costs for Chinese cooperation with programs that jeopardize the security of American people.
To go back a bit, you mentioned there needs to be enough political willpower on the American leadership side to follow through on more stringent measures against Chinese cooperation with North Korea. And you also mentioned that there is some fear of disrupting global markets and sanctioning Chinese banks. What are some of the other reservations that policymakers would have in the U.S. of following through on stricter measures?
Well, in the past, American policymakers have always placed a higher priority on integrating China into the international system than on disarming North Korea. And unfortunately, this approach, which started in the administration of George W. Bush, hasn't worked, because what we've got is a nuked-up North Korea and a very arrogant Beijing. And I know that policymakers don't want to make tough choices. They don't want to cause the risks that confronting China will have. But by not confronting China, we know that the North Koreans within 2, 3, maybe 4 years will be able to put a nuclear warhead on a ballistic missile that will be able to hit the lower 48 states. And if we feel that we can't deter the North Koreans because of instability in the regime, and that's a very complicated issue, but if we feel we can't deter the North Koreans, then we have issues of war and peace that we must face. So I think that there are a whole range of issues that we can do right now, well before we have to start thinking about the use of force. But we will be forced to use force if we don't take these interim measures now.
As you mentioned, North Korea is fast approaching the capability to launch a nuclear missile to the lower 48 states, and there's a lot of fear on the U.S. side of what this means. Where does this fit into China's endgame calculus, and what do you think the Chinese hope to gain from assisting North Korea?
China views the United States as its primary strategic adversary, and if the North Koreans were to launch a missile against the United States, I don't believe people in Beijing would be terribly upset. We sort of assume that they're on our side, but and a lot of people say, oh, you know, the Chinese have been supporting the North Koreans just to maintain stability. But if peace really were Beijing's objective, if stability were what it was concerned about most, it wouldn't be trying to make North Korea even more of a threat to the United States. We have to face facts. And, you know, the Chinese and the North Koreans are villains, but this is not an issue regarding Beijing or Pyongyang. This is an issue about what American political leaders will do to protect Americans. And so far, over the course of decades, Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives, they have failed to do so. I mean, North Korea did not become instantly dangerous at noon on January 20th of this year. It took a lot of misguided bad policy relentlessly pursued by Washington in order to put the American people in such jeopardy. And now we have got to face facts. And I believe the American people need to demand that Washington policymakers start taking effective action against not only North Korea, but its chief enabler, China.
Early this year, South Korea and the U.S. installed THAAD missile defense batteries in South Korea for the purpose of protecting the peninsula, which China strongly objected to. Could you explain why China objected to THAAD's installation and what actions they have taken in retaliation?
China, which says it doesn't believe in unilateral sanctions, has adopted so many unilateral sanctions against the South Koreans. So, for instance, preventing tour groups from going to South Korea, banning South Korean K-pop groups from going to China. Also, there has been a concerted campaign against Lotte, the South Korean chaebol, which transferred some land to the South Korean Defense Ministry for the THAAD battery. There have been so many instances of Chinese sanctions that we can't take their words on that point seriously. I think China is upset because they do understand that with a few turns of the screw, probably THAAD could be used to, in some way, degrade their missile threat against the United States and others. But it's more than just that. I think that the Chinese have gotten very arrogant recently. They look at the South Koreans as people who are vassals in their eyes, and so they're very upset that the vassals are taking actions that are upsetting Beijing, because Beijing believes that it deserves the deference, goodwill, and cooperation of others. And so this is a traditional view of China that is starting to reassert itself in the Chinese capital, that they're entitled to do whatever they want, and others on their periphery will have to be obedient. This is just an issue where they believe the rest of the world is not entitled to defend itself. This Chinese view is outrageous because they're the ones that have been making North Korea a threat by fueling its missile and nuke programs. And now they're telling the rest of the world that they can't defend themselves from North Korea. And I hope that South Korea does not accede to China, because that, I think, would be a very bad sign, not only for North Korea, but also for other issues in the region.
Well, before we wrap up our conversation, are there any other comments that you have for our listeners to hear about China and North Korea?
China has weaponized North Korea. And although American policymakers don't want to see that, nonetheless, there is too much evidence to the contrary. And American policymakers are going to have to start defending the American people. You know, I believe that at some point we're going to have to say to Beijing, you can do business with the North Koreans, you can do business with us, but you can't do business with both of us at the same time. And if American policymakers don't say that, it's shame on them.
All right. Thank you so much, Gordon, for your time and talking to us about this important topic.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for once again joining us here on Korean Context. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Just a quick note that, as always, the views expressed by our interviewees are their own and not necessarily reflective of the views of KEI. Now, if you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please subscribe to KEI on any of the podcast apps Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and of course you can also find it on our website, www.keia.org. Thank you once again for listening, and I hope to see you again next week.